It's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Welcome back, folks, to the Sick Podcast, Recruits Draftcast. Guys, today's a big one. We got the Bob Father. We got Bobby Margarita on deck. Bob McKenzie is going to join us to talk about his midterm rankings. It's never too early to talk about prospects, and that's exactly what we're going to do today. We got lots to dive into, so let's get into it.
Turn up your volume, because you're about to listen to the Sick Podcast. Recruits Draftcast.
And with the first overall selection in the 2023 NHL Draft, the Chicago Blackhawks are very proud to select, from the Regina Pats, the Western Hockey League, Connor Bedard.
The sickest NHL draft and scouting podcast. It's going to be sick.
As always, I'm your host, producer Shane, the man by my side. You know him, you love him. With his dog this time around, Grant, how we doing?
Yeah, we just got back from a big vet appointment yesterday, and he's looking for some attention, so I think we better give it to him. This is Teddy.
Fair enough. Everyone, say hi to Teddy. He's our mascot. Hopefully, he'll be part of the show more times in the future. But Grant, pretty big guest coming on here. Pretty excited.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Well, so am I. So am I. So let's just bring him in. The legend himself, Mr. Bob McKenzie. Bob, thanks for taking the time to chat with us. How you doing?
Excellent, guys. How you doing today?
I'm doing fantastic. You know, yesterday I always look forward to your rankings, and I was not disappointed. It's an exciting draft coming up, and we're going to talk all about it. But there are some things we'd like to get to before that. Particular this year's draft. It's bittersweet because it is the last centralized draft, meaning that all the teams and their scouting staff will be present at the venue. Moving forward, starting next year, that won't be the case anymore. Now, Grant and I have talked about this on the show previously. We, you know, we weren't too thrilled about this new decision. But what were your thoughts on it? How do you see this whole thing going down?
Yeah, I guess, in some respects, I guess maybe I thought it was going to be inevitable that it would eventually get to this because of cost or logistics or all those things. But the thing that I always loved about the National Hockey League draft was that it was the sort of the official end of season party. It was a convention. It was the entire hockey world, NHL, the junior hockey people, whatever. Everybody would gather, usually in Montreal. And it's this massive convention with a great amount of buzz that goes with it, because it's not just the draft. It's also the week before. Generally speaking, it's always been the week before free agency. Mm-hmm. So there's usually lots of trades and free agent talk, and it's just this, it's like Woodstock, the first Woodstock for hockey fans. And now you're going to have all the teams stay in their own cities. And I'm sure from a logistics point of view, from a convenience point of view, there's probably a lot of teams that are really happy to do it. And from the cost point of view, the NHL. But it just, you know, the thing that made hockey unique was that they were the last ones to do this convention style draft. And now we're just going to go the way of the NFL, the NBA, and whatever else. So it's really unfortunate. And, you know, it's kind of exciting that the draft is in Vegas, although I don't go to the draft now anymore because we don't broadcast it. So I have no reason to be there, but it's going to be at the Sphere. And I, at first, when I thought that, I was like, oh, this is really cool. And then I started thinking about the Sphere. Well, what is the Sphere? The Sphere is this massive multimedia new age thing where once you're in there, it's like suspending disbelief. And yeah. I mean, it's great for a U2 show. I just worry that it might be this dizzying cacophony of video and music and sound, and so much so that when the draft's actually going on and teams are trying to figure out what the heck's going on, there's going to be whatever it is, a 100-foot Sphere wall behind them, you know, belting out whatever. And so there was part of me thought, yeah, it's the last one. Maybe try to go to Vegas for the last one. And then I thought, nah, what the hell? I don't need another trip to Vegas. And Montreal was the place where the draft was the best. Whenever it was in Montreal, that was the best. And I realize I'm sounding like an old guy now, but let's get off my lawn. But Montreal is the home of the draft. It was the birthplace of the draft. Mm-hmm. And I really miss those days at the Montreal Forum.
Well, just the 2022 draft, you know, I got the privilege to be there in attendance, and it was insane. I mean, it's just such a memorable experience. Obviously, it was an eventful draft, a lot of stuff happening, right? The first overall, you didn't know who was going to be, and all of this, but I agree with you that draft was special. Now,
what you lose is the potential for drama. So just as an example, mm-hmm. I was in the Montreal Forum that the Montreal Canadiens trotted out Peter Svoboda. And nobody knew he was there, and nobody knew they were taking him, and the place went bonkers. It was bananas. Yeah. It was electric and that sort of stuff. And and another one, you know, people always ask me for draft memories, and one of my most bizarre draft memories, but I always remember this, was the time that the Philadelphia Flyers drafted a kid named Barry Tabobadong in the third or fourth or fifth round. He was a tough guy that played for Bill LaForge's Oshawa Generals back in the day. And yeah. Barry was so excited at being drafted that he jumped up at the Forum and he wanted to get into the next row in front of him. So he stepped on the seat in front of him. And if you know the seats at the old Forum, they levered up like that. He stepped on the back end of the seat and his foot went jammed right through and he couldn't get it out. And so they had to get a maintenance man up there to take the seat apart so he could go down and get his jersey from the sweater from the Philadelphia Flyers. And the sad postscript to that is that Barry was killed in a tragic snowplow. He was a snowplow driver up in Parry Island near the reserve there in Parry Sound. And it was really unfortunate. But that's always one of my great, crazy draft memories. And when you have a centralized location and the NHL headquarters will be there with all the draft prospects, but the teams are everywhere else, it's just going to lose a lot. It's not going to be the same.
Yeah, I know. I completely agree. And I mean, you mentioned them following the formula of the NFL, the NBA. One thing that does concern me with that is, you know, whether or not they're going to have at least one representative from each team. You'd have to think so, because you can't have Gary up there the whole night getting booed. That would just ruin everything. And I imagine you're one of the players waiting to hear your name called, and all you hear is booing. And then, oh, did he call me? Like, so I you have to think they're going to have at least one representative from each team.
Yeah, I don't know. Nothing about the logistics. I'm the hockey outsider now, not the hockey insider. So I don't know any of that stuff. And I just know that it makes me sad to think that the great convention, hockey convention, that signified basically the end of the hockey year. Yeah. Where everybody was there and you get to see all the reporters and all the media and all the broadcasters and all the teams and the scouts and the managers and the coaches, and virtually everybody was there in hockey. It was just a great festival.
I agree. No, that's it. It was an event. It's still going to be this year. I'm curious to see how it's going to go down in the Sphere. That's going to be something else. But Grant, I know you were excited to talk to Bob about his time with the Hockey News and take a trip down memory lane. So I'll leave the floor to you.
I'm going to just expand a little bit on this first topic here. Have you talked to any scouts that like the idea, Bob? I know everyone that I've talked to wishes that it had stayed the same.
Yeah, to be honest with you, when I surveyed the scouts, I haven't asked anybody about that. Short answer is I don't know.
Okay. I scouts would bring their families, like Trevor's, young lad used to get up on stage all the time with the draft pick, and it, you know, you'd see the different year every year, you know, getting a little older.
Well, we saw Daryl Cates' family grow up before our very eyes.
Yeah, you know, and yeah, there's a good example, you know. I mean, the kids that go to the draft from each, you know, you'd have it in a different town. I mean, I agree with it, like it was great in Montreal, but one of the positive things about it being in different cities is, you know, if you're a fan of the game and you got to take your kids and go and watch your you know, the guy get picked in the first round. Like, I mean, Montreal was the ultimate example in 2022 with them having the first pick, which was a rarity. But I mean, that's, you know, that we're not going to have that anymore either. You know?
No, you lose a lot. And you're right. I mean, I think it was in Jersey that time, and Bettman was up there, and he says, "We've got a trade," and they were all booing him. And he says, "You're going to want to hear this."
Yeah.
I remember it was the Corey Schneider going to Jersey trade.
Yeah. Were you at the Mario draft?
Oh, yeah. That was, you know, and again, the drama of Mario Lemieux draft, he announced he's drafted by Pittsburgh, and he just kind of sits in the seat and, and he had this great Gallic shrugged, like as if to say, like, fine, you may have drafted me, but I'm not acting excited about it. And I always remember he had a great suit on that day, I think it was black with a very thin silver pinstripe, and he ended up going to the table, and he took the jersey, but he wouldn't put it on.
Yeah.
And that was a dramatic moment. That was really, really something special. And especially in Montreal, with, you know, Montreal loves its local heroes, and not many bigger than Mario. So that was a fun one too.
Well, at least Eric didn't go that far. He, you know, you knew that he probably wasn't going to Quebec, but he, you know, he didn't just sit in a seat, right?
Yeah.
But I just want to take a bit of a trip down memory lane here and just talk about, you know, growing up and how you, how you became the draft guru, really, you know. I mean, you're my mentor when it comes to the NHL and the draft, and I'll touch on that in a few minutes, but I mean, you grew up, in Scarborough. I'm going to say the 1900s, we'll say. Robert Malcolmson McKenzie.
That's now, correct.
Got a little bit of Scottish heritage there.
Well, mostly Irish.
Oh, okay.
But I'm sure there's probably a lot of crossover there. The middle name Malcolmson's kind of interesting. That's my grandmother's maiden name, her family name.
Okay.
And she, so that, yeah, that's that. If you've ever seen Ray Donovan,
yes.
Ray Donovan's wife, her name is Paula Malcolmson, and that's because her grandfather and my grandmother were brother and sister. So I don't know her at all. I've never met her, but we share part of the same name, and she's in Deadwood and Sons of Anarchy and a lot of different shows like that.
So okay.
Anyways, I digress. So I grew up in Scarborough and, you know, loved to play hockey. Wasn't any good at it, but I still loved to play it. Loved to follow it. Loved to, you know, I can very well remember the Toronto Maple Leafs winning the Stanley Cup in 1967. But what I really remember about that was I kept a scrapbook of all the articles from the Toronto Star, the Toronto Telegram, and the Globe and Mail. And when the playoffs were over, I had this huge scrapbook with all the articles of Red Burnett and Frank Orr and Milt Dunnell and Jim Proudfoot and Rex McLeod, and on it goes. So. That was kind of my environment growing up, and never really set out to, you know, I was like every kid, I guess I wanted to play in the NHL, but I think a lot of people say, well, when they got to be 16 or 17, they realized they're never going to play in the NHL. I never thought I was good enough to play in the NHL. Yeah. So that was never a consideration. But I guess after I graduated high school, I started to think that I might want to do something with the written word because I was terrible at math, terrible at science. So I ultimately decided to go into journalism.
That's cool. I tell the story that I got called up in my second midget year to play against the Nepean Raiders when Steve Eisenman was with them, and he was 15, I was 17, and he skated circles around me, and I said, okay, college, it's college for you there, young lad. And I'm the same as you. I took journalism. Actually, I started with broadcasting. Tried that at Algonquin, and as you can tell by how unsmooth I am here, I made the right decision to move into journalism. But I was hoping to be the next Danny Gallivan, but I soon realized that wasn't going to be the case. And so just like
I was the opposite. I never had any interest in it. I never even thought about broadcasting. I never expected to be on television or radio or anything. I just wanted to be a hockey writer. And the funny thing is, I never actually became a beat writer and kind of skipped those steps what have you. But, I ended up being a columnist of the Toronto Star and editor-in-chief of the Hockey News and all of those things. But I never set out to be quote unquote an insider, and I never anticipated that. It was just sort of an organic thing. I always covering junior hockey. My first job was at the Sioux Star in Sioux Ste. Marie, so I covered junior hockey. I spent a lot of time in junior rinks. When you spend time in junior rinks, you're around scouts. They're there to scout the prospects. You get to know the scouts, and that aspect of the game kind of intrigued me a lot. And there's two levels to it in junior hockey. So in junior hockey, they have a draft of 15 or 16 year olds to stock the league. So I covered and was interested in that. So you'd follow what was going on in minor hockey.
And that,
and at the same time you were at the rink and you got to know the NHL scouts, and there was the NHL draft, and you would follow and get to that. And so I always had a strong affinity for those drafts and who the next kids coming along are and what the next wave of talent's going to look like.
I don't know about you, but I had a subscription to the Hockey News from about the age of 10 on. I just loved it. It was, there weren't, not like today when you Hockey News, you can get just so much of it. It was basically your only link to the junior leagues. And I started following the draft probably 1973 because I was a 67s fan, and Denny Potvin went first overall that year. And that kind of, that was my introduction really to the draft. And I just kind of was a huge draft fan from then on. Did you follow the draft before did you have the Hockey News before you?
Well, I never had a subscription to the Hockey News, which is funny, even though I became the editor-in-chief when I was 25 years old.
Yes.
But, in terms of the draft, I probably, and again, this happened sort of organically. Once I got to junior hockey, once I got the job at the Sioux Star, that's when I really started to dial in. When I was covering the Sioux Greyhounds, then that's where I started to really dial into the draft. And I also had at the time I started going out with a girl on the last day of grade 13 and ultimately became my wife, Cindy. But her younger brother,
John
Goodwin, he was playing minor hockey at the time for Wexford and in Toronto, in the Metropolitan Toronto Hockey League, now the GTHL. And so he wanted to get drafted in the OHL, and once he got to the OHL, he wanted to get drafted to the NHL. And so, again, organically, being part of a family and being around somebody who was going through the process, you become that much more acutely aware of the ups and downs and what's involved in it. And so, and plus it ended up being my job, both at the Sioux Star and then as editor in chief of the Hockey News. So, but having that connection to John, and the ironic thing is he won OHL Rookie of the Year, beat Don Beaupre.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
For OHL Rookie of the Year in the 78-79 season with the Greyhounds. And he won the OHL Scoring Championship in his last year. And in, after his second season in the OHL and his third season in the OHL, he never got drafted at all.
Right.
Even though he led the league in scoring. And so if there should have been a family aversion to drafts, we probably should have had it. But nevertheless, it also taught me a lot about the – sort of the human side of what it's like to get drafted, to not get drafted, to want to get drafted, and have a better understanding of the process that all these kids go through, both getting to junior hockey and getting to the NHL.
You've answered a lot of my questions as you've gone along here. So, I mean, that's quite a coincidence that I thought maybe, you know, I'm picturing, well, Cindy must have gone to a game in Sault Ste. Marie and, you know, ran into her there or something, but
here's the very quick version.
You both ended up in the Sioux.
Yeah, here's the very quick version of how it happened. I actually ended up in the Sioux before Johnny did. So,
okay.
As I said, he was playing for the Wexford Midgets, and they were in what was then called the Wrigley Playdowns. And the Wrigley Playdowns was the forerunner of the Air Canada Cup, the forerunner of the TELUS Cup, the National Midget Championship. So they had won the Southern Ontario play down for to advance to the next level of the Wrigley playdowns, and they had to go on the day after Christmas in 1977, maybe it was the 77-78 season, 77-78, so Christmas of 77, Boxing Day, I went with the Wexford team on a bus, Johnny's dad, me, and all the other parents that were going and stuff. And we went to Sault Ste. Marie, and that's where the playdowns occurred. So two things happened during those playdowns. The Wexford team won and earned the right to go to Verdun for the national champion, Wrigley National Midget Championship. Yeah. And I got to meet the sports editor of the Sioux Star and some media people in Sault Ste. Marie. So while I was there, I started asking about, I was in my second year of Ryerson's journalism program. I said, what do I got to do to get a summer job at the Sioux Star? So they hooked me up with the managing editor. I put an application in, and lo and behold, by February or March of that year, 78, towards the end of my second year of Ryerson, I had a summer job at the Sioux Star. And then it was in April, May, June, somewhere around there, that the OHL draft happened, and the Sioux Greyhounds took Johnny Goodwin in the fifth round. And so I moved up to the Sioux for that summer. And then Johnny came up at the end of that summer for his first training camp with Paul Coffey and the other guys that got drafted at the same time as he did.
Did you, I was going to ask you about, like, did you foresee Coffey becoming the superstar?
Yeah.
That he,
people ask me one of the, you know, things you'll never forget. It wasn't the first time I saw Paul Coffey skate, because I would go to Johnny's games in the Metropolitan Toronto Hockey League, and his birth year was like Steve Ludzik and Johnny Kirk and Darrell Evans and Greg Gilbert was a year older, but it was a midget team, so there were when Johnny was a first year midget, he played for the Mississauga Reps. And so Steve Ludzik, as I said, Johnny Kirk, Darrell Evans, Larry Murphy, Paul Coffey. So I would go to the games and see all these guys. But when I went to the first Sault Ste. Marie training camp, it was at the old, it was at the Lake Superior State University college rink, because the, I think there were the roof had blown off the Memorial Gardens in Sault Ste. Marie. And, so I went over there and I saw, first time I really saw Coffey at that level was in training camp, and he picked up the puck behind the net and he just blew up the ice. And people say the most impressive skating you've ever seen. He just, like, it was hovered over the ice.
Yeah.
And it didn't take very long to realize that he was going to be a big time offensive defenseman in the National Hockey League.
Yeah. Yeah. And I guess you saw Ronnie Francis as a rookie.
Yep. We used to ride the bus with Ronnie. Ronnie was the most conscientious kid on the team. Everybody else would be screwing around on the bus and Ronnie would be doing his homework. And Ronnie was a local kid. Obviously he lived at home and got to see his mom and dad and his brother through all the games. And John Van Biesbroek was on that team. It was a lot of fun.
Johnny Goodwin, I mean, that was a heck of a fifth round pick. He had 166 points in his last year.
Yeah.
And I was going back over it. Bobby Smith, Gretzky, Dougie Gilmore, and Mike Kosicki, who I'm sure you remember too, yeah, are the only guys that have ever scored more points in the Ontario League. And Johnny never got drafted. Why? Like, yeah, give me your...
Well, he was
the skating, obviously.
Yeah, he wasn't a great skater, and he was 6 feet tall, just 6 feet
yeah
tall. But he was like when he graduated junior, he was probably 165 pounds, if that. And he wasn't the strongest guy in the world, and he wasn't a fast skater. And if you remember hockey back then, skating was important, but being big and strong, or being hockey strong, was really even more important, because it was a physical game and it was a chaotic game. But he still played seven, 8 years of pro. Won a Turner Cup in the IHL with the Peoria Rivermen. His first year as head coach was John Brophy with the Nova Scotia Voyageurs. And Brophy ended up liking him so much down the road that when Brophy was the head coach in St. Catharines, Johnny and so Johnny and Brophy got along famously, and which is funny because Johnny was an offensive player in junior hockey, and he became sort of a checking center, but who could chip in offensively, and Brophy really liked him. So
that's funny. I don't know if he played with Rod Shute or not. Do you remember Rod? Played for Sudbury.
He used to play for when Johnny played Nova Scotia. I went to a game in Erie. They just put a team, Pittsburgh put their farm team in Erie, and if I remember correctly, Rod Shutt was on that team. So.
Okay, well, he played for the Voyageurs too, but he also played under Brophy. I don't know if they were teammates then or not, but he tells a story about like he loved Brophy. I guess he had a Timex watch, and he was just storming because they'd lost, and he threw it on the ground, and he stomped on it, Brophy. And so then the next day he left, and Rod swept up the watch and put it in a bag. And then when they had practice later, he brought it out to him, had it to him, and said, takes a lick and keeps on ticking. He said, it was one of the, Brophy didn't laugh, but you could tell, he knew that he was smiling inside. He said,
very, very quick Brophy story. Similar. He, in St. Catharines, one of the players on the team had a nice sports coat, and Brophy was a very natty dresser. He really used to dress up. And, so Brophy saw this guy's sports coat and really liked it. And so he showed up on the bench wearing it during the game. And the player's like, that's my guy. He goes, I really like it. He said, so guys all thought it was really funny. Well, they had a really bad first period, and he came in and he went ballistic in the dressing room. He took the coat off and ripped it in half.
Okay. Well, that doesn't sound like it was a one-time thing then. No. Oh boy, that's crazy. But the hockey news, I mean, I lived in the rural area, and you had the mailbox, and I just waited. If my hockey news didn't come in on the day it was supposed to come in, I was distraught. I just loved it. Mm-hmm. And I mean, Bill Libby, Bob Verdi, Stan Fischler, Jay Greenberg, yeah. All those guys, I remember reading all their articles, and later Al Morganti, but Ken McKenzie was the publisher, right?
Right.
And then Ken retires, and then along comes this guy I'd never heard of, a young lad, and all of a sudden he's like editor-in-chief. And I go, what the heck happened there? Is this nepotism or what? But obviously Ken's not related to you, but what's the story there? How did you get that job? You must have been chairman.
I worked at the Sioux Star for the better part of 2.5 years.
Yeah.
And then wanted to come back home to Toronto. So I came back home and I worked freelance for the better part of a year. I worked 2 or 3 re-rate shifts a week at the Globe and Mail. I did a little freelance for the Globe and Mail, junior hockey stories. And I wrote for a junior hockey magazine that used to exist back in the day. And I used to do some freelance for the hockey news as well. And it was during my time doing, Tom Murray was the editor-in-chief. A guy named Don Wall was the publisher. Ken McKenzie was no longer involved in the publication. He sold it to a company out in New York called the Whitney Communications Corporation.
Yeah.
And it was WCC Publishing. And so they were based on King Street in Toronto. So I got a note from Tom Murray, a call from Tom Murray partway through that year. And he said, hey, I'm leaving to go back to the States at the end of this season. We're going to have to hire a new editor-in-chief. Would that be something you'd be interested in being considered for? And I'm like, yeah, sure. That sounds great to me. I was trying to get, all I wanted to, at that stage of my life, I just wanted to be a hockey writer, and I wanted to get a job with the Toronto Star, the Toronto Sun, or the Globe and Mail, covering the Toronto Maple Leafs and being a beat reporter in the NHL. But I was having no luck getting a full-time job with those papers. And so I was like, yeah, I'd be interested. And so fortunately at the Sioux Star, I did a lot of copy editing. I did a lot of production stuff, laying out pages, writing headlines, writing cut lines, doing all that sort of stuff. And so when they interviewed me at the hockey news and they realized that I had a real, real passion for hockey, obviously, a real sort of affinity from the grassroots on up, knew the history of the game because I just grew up in that environment. And then on top of that, had the editing and production skills to maybe do the behind the scenes stuff that's so important in putting a newspaper together. And again, I was hopelessly unqualified in terms of business acumen or anything else. I was 25 years old. I only had a full-time job at the Sioux Star and nowhere else. And yet I ended up getting the job, and that was on June 1st, 1982. One of the first things I did was go to the draft, and that was the Gord Kluzak, Gary Nyland.
Great.
And, was that Bellows? Was that year? Or was Kluzak one or two? Yeah. I can't even remember.
Bellows one, Kluzak two.
Yep. And so that was the, it wasn't the first draft I went to, because when I was at the Sioux Star, I would go to the drafts as well. So, and then I got the job at the hockey news, and then I just made a point of, as time wore on, the thing people don't realize now, it's funny, because you like the draft, Grant, there's a certain swath of hockey society that absolutely is avid about the draft and prospects. In the 1980s, I can tell you there was no mainstream media coverage of the draft in any way, shape, or form.
Yeah.
And the only time anybody would write about the draft was in the day or two or three before that, the beat writers would write a story about what was the team might do and who the guys were that they might draft. But there was no prospect list. At one point, there was. I think the first one that I can remember was Kyle Woodleaf had something called the Red Line Report. And it was his own private service that he went out and scouted players and talked to people. And the reason it was the Red Line Report is because it was printed on, I think it was on printed on red paper. So that it couldn't be photocopied.
Right.
And that was how he tried to protect proprietary information. And he sold subscriptions to that, and teams would subscribe to it or fans would subscribe to it. But he might have been the pioneer on that front. If there was somebody else doing it, I don't remember who it was.
No.
But the very first year that I ever did anything special for the draft was 1985. I had to, sorry, 1984.
84. So we were getting ready. We have a picture of it here.
Yeah. Yeah, we were getting ready to. Well, that was that's the first draft preview. That was the first draft preview, and that one would have been in '88. But in 1984, with the Mario draft, that was the first year that I ever surveyed NHL scouts to get a consensus ranking. And okay. I ranked 10 forwards and 11 defensemen, 21 skaters, no goalies. And that was the very first time all scouts asked them what they thought and then took that information and compiled it into a list that ranked them. But as I say, it was a forerunner of what I do now and what I've done for a long time. But the weird thing is I looked at it because it was actually Steve Dryden, the TSN quizmaster, who asked me to check. He wanted to check and see if this year might be the 40th anniversary of the first time we did any rankings. And so, as I said, I went back in the bound copies of the hockey news that I've got, and I looked, and sure enough, there it was, 1984. So then I went to the 1985, and I didn't do it. We just published the Central Scouting rankings, and I looked in 86, and we didn't do it. And again, Central Scouting rankings. In 1987, I looked, and we didn't do it. And it wasn't until the 1988 year that we did a standalone draft publication, and that one we ranked all the prospects.
Okay.
And on a composite list, you know, forwards, defensemen, goalies, all on one list, did the profiles, and that was, and we did that every year from then. And that was the real genesis of what I've been doing ever since.
Well, put that back up for a sec there. I hate to correct you there, Bob, but, Kirk Muller was drafted in 84.
That's correct. Yeah. That was a review.
Right. Preview. But that was the first one where you really, like, I mean, it wasn't the full draft guide or whatever.
No, but to this what you're looking at there, if you look at the date.
Oh, okay. That's 88. Okay.
It's
right.
June of 88.
Right. Gotcha.
I don't even know why we put Muller on. We should have put Mario on.
Yeah. I was going to ask you about that.
I'm not sure what led to that shitty decision, but nevertheless, here we are. So,
yeah. So
88 was the first year that we did a standalone publication.
Gotcha.
A big, like, you know, 20, 30, 40 ranked players based on the consensus of talking to the scouts.
But yeah, that's right. Now, I mean, that draft guide, I mean, I must have read it 100 times. I just loved it. You know, it was such a, whose idea was it? Was it your idea?
It was my idea, and it was the bane of my existence because you know how much time it takes to, you know, go from scratch, not knowing anything. See, it's different now too, because think about this. I'm the editor-in-chief of the Hockey News. So I'm covering all the teams in the National Hockey League. I've got a staff of, you know, started out as three or four, ended up being 9, 10, 11. There were multiple publications. We did a magazine, Inside Hockey. I had, you know, technical responsibilities, production responsibilities, computer systems to worry about, this and that. So it was this unbelievable amount of stuff that you have to do just to get the publication out every week. And then you take it on to be, quote unquote, a draft expert, which has always been a bit of a joke because I don't scout the players myself, never did, never will. I see them play anecdotally here and there, but my expertise comes from stealing other people's information, and that is the scouts. But you've got to have the relationship with the scouts to be able to get them to tell you that information, and that's what I was good at. So I realized I could take that information and package it and put it in, get a consensus, and provide a unique proprietary thing that was different than what anybody else was doing at the time. But then stupidly, and I got you hooked into this when you did the Hockey News draft preview for a little bit, writing those profiles. So if you're gonna rank 40 or 60 or 80 players and you gotta write 80 profiles, initially I started, they were like 400 words each. And it was ridiculous. And I don't remember the year that, you could have to look it up, but it would have been the Iraq War. The NHL All-Star Game would have been in Chicago because everybody remembers the anthem while the Iraq War was going on and how crazy it was and that. But I was scheduled to go to that All-Star Game and I couldn't go because I literally was up for the better part of 3 days without sleep, doing all the writing of the profiling and everything. And I had this deadline that I had to get to. And so, yeah, that was somewhat insane, but it is what it is.
So you know how to cut and paste just like,
See, cut and paste now is a different meaning cut and paste before. You actually cut and paste.
Literally. Yeah, my first job was a sports editor of the Chesterville Record, my first journalism job. And, you know, you're in there putting it together, right? You're little one lines and you're moving them all around and cutting and pasting. And you were hands on right from day one then with the hockey news. Yeah, well, when I started up recruits and I followed your model. Like I was fortunate enough to, while being related to Brian Murray and Timmy Murray and Todd Hardy and that, you know, the gang from Shawville and getting to know them and getting to know Trevor Timmons and doing a little scouting and stuff. I always loved that you, I mean, who better to ask about the draft than the scouts, right? Yeah, and, I mean, how were you able to develop that trust with them where you wouldn't share that information? And how did, you know, that mustn't have been easy to do.
Well, you know what? I just, again, everything kind of happens organically because I just got to know them and you become friends with them and you're around them a lot in junior rinks and what have you. And as I said, I had a great interest in it. You know, when I was at the Sioux Star, back in the day, the big thing used to be for the draft, the NHL used to keep the central scouting list confidential. It was really confidential. Nobody was to get it.
Okay.
And there were two guys, two junior hockey reporters that were really good at getting the central scouting. John Herbert from the London Free Press and Marc LaChapelle from the Journal de Montreal.
Okay.
And they were the two guys that used to get, and I used to be like, when I was at the Sioux Star, I was like, this is the year I'm going to beat Herbie and Marc LaChapelle and I'm going to get it. And I remember how proud I was one time when I got the NHL Central Scouting List. And then when I got to the Hockey News, we would do the same thing. And we would always try to get the Central Scouting List. And the stupid thing was the NHL back then didn't want it out there. It was secret information, top secret. Instead of promoting their game by saying, the prospect's coming up, get to know these guys. They're like, no, we don't want anyone to know anything about this. And so they even started going to great lengths because guys like John Herbert, Marc LaChapelle, and myself were putting the central scouting list, publishing it. They would start doing coded lists. So if they had back in the 21 team era, they would say, okay, on the Hartford Whalers, the list we send out to the Hartford Whalers, let's switch 16 and 17. And on the list we send to this team, let's switch 19 and 22 or 21. And so every team got a little slightly different version, which makes no sense, but nevertheless, that's what they used to do. And then we had to start taking the list and to cover ourselves, we had to switch something up. So then we would say, we switched up, so try and figure out where it's from. And it was chaos. So.
That's crazy. I didn't realize that. Was it Dorian, Pierre Dorian, that started the Central Scouting? Or I'm trying to think who.
I don't remember. I know he was at Central Scouting, but I also know he scouted for the Leafs. And that for our viewers and listeners, that's Pierre Dorian Sr.
Yes.
Pierre Dorian, ex-GM of the Senators, his dad. And Pierre Sr. was a great guy and a snappy dresser. He used to wear, I always remember the suit he used to wear at the draft. The Arizona Coyotes brought those blue suits that one year.
Yeah.
You know, the really electric blues, like much like the sweater I'm wearing. And that Pierre Dorian, when he was with the Leafs, he used to have a a real bright, bright, bright blue sweater, and he had white shoes and a white belt. And he was always a tan guy, and he looked pretty good. Looked pretty spiffy.
Well, hopefully Rolf didn't show up at any of those drafts, or he might have lost a suit to as well. Now, I think that's, you know, so much for the brief look down memory lane. That was, but I mean, that's great, Bob. I appreciate that. But I guess we're going to be having you on a little longer than, you know, I hope
that's all right. Fire
away. You're not in a rush here, but let's get to your draft list. That was the purpose of bringing you on in the first place. So I'm going to put up my top 40 beside your top 40 here. And just, I mean, it's pretty similar, you know, and it often is, right? Usually our lists are fairly close at the top. Now, Caden Lindstrom, I've loved him since the Hlinka. And as far as I'm concerned, the top five guys after Celebrini, you can kind of interchange them. Yeah. I'm just curious to know if, you know, if those guys, the top five, were kind of close on your list. I mean, I have him in down a little bit, and I think on some lists he's kind of dropped a bit.
Well, no, absolutely. Yeah, he's trending in the wrong direction. There's no doubt about that. But yeah, you know, and I think too, you know, you look at it and you might be less inclined to change your list as you go along, because I think when you see a guy like Lindstrom, who's, you know, 6'3" center, and he's filling the net, and he's, you know, at the end of the day, you got to know that a 6'3" center that's shooting the lights out and plays a physical game, and, you know, that's what every NHL team in the world desperately wants.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Big power center that's productive. And you know, and again, mine's a consensus. So we had some people that had Lindstrom higher than I have him at five, and we have some people who have him lower. And that when you do your list, you're looking at it and saying, okay, Celebrini's the number one guy, but I look and see a 6'3" center that scored 37 goals in 42 games. he's going to be one of the top handful of guys. There's no doubt about it. And same thing with Siliev. He's, you know, a 6'7" defenseman. You know, the only proviso, and we go round and round the mulberry bush on Russians, but, you know.
Yeah.
With video-only scouting and no general managers or North American scouts getting to see this guy live, you know, it doesn't prevent you from taking him at a really high spot. But boy, you know, it adds an extra layer of uncertainty for the teams when they're contemplating that. And, you know, one of the 10 scouts I interviewed for our survey, you know, he said, I'll put Celebrini at one, but honestly, for us, hockey wise, just purely on hockey, you know, it's a toss up. It's a jump ball between Siliev and Celebrini.
Wow.
And so I'm like, okay, fair enough. And I said, but, you know, it's one thing to rank somebody equally. It's another thing at the moment of truth, if you were picking in that
draft
spot, would you be still 50-50 at that moment when you have to make a decision? And of course the answer is no, because there's not as much comfort. But, you know, a scout's job technically is not to make the decision on whether you draft somebody or not. The scout's job is to say, this is the order I see them in. This is how I put them. And it's up to the manager to decide what the final call is going to be. And as another NHL scout said to me, another NHL scout said, I'd like to meet an NHL general manager who would take Siliev ahead of Celebrini, not being able to go and see Siliev live.
Yes.
And not have your scouts there week after week after week, month after month after month, seeing live viewings with the people you trust the most, not just those scouts that are based in Russia. And so who knows? Maybe if it were an open situation in Russia where the general managers and all the head scouts could go over to Russia and spend a significant amount of time watching Siliev practice, watching him game in, game out. Maybe it is a jump ball for him and Celebrini, because 6'7" defenseman that can skate the way he skates and can do some of the things he does with the puck and do some of the things without the puck. As I say, what do the NHL teams want more than anything else? They want big number one centers, and they want big number one defensemen.
Yeah.
Celebrini's good. By the way, if anybody says, well, Celebrini's not that big. Well, he's 6'190", and you're right, he's not 6'3" or 6'4". But I was looking at Jonathan Toews' central scouting statistics, a bio for his draft year, and he was like 6'1", 195. So at the same age, Toews was an inch taller and 5 pounds heavier than Celebrini. So Celebrini could still be, you know, a bigger guy, and he's got a power element to his game too.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, he's not Sidney Crosby, obviously, but as far as away from the puck defensive zone, and at that age, I don't know that there's been a player that scouts see that's just that defensively responsible as a center.
Well, you know what? It's funny because some people hate when we use comparables, or even if you just mention, even if you qualify it. So I will sit here and say to you, Macklin Celebrini is not Sidney Crosby.
Right.
But there are so many elements of his game that are so very, very similar to Crosby.
Yes.
Everything, just he's always got the puck. When he's got the puck, he's as dangerous to make a play with it as he is to score a goal. His skills are outstanding. His tenacity and his industriousness, his work ethic, his character.
Leadership.
Without the puck, the conscientious, you know, being conscientious without the puck, wanting to play defensively, track back and do all the things that Sid was doing even when he was 16 and 17 years old. They have very similar games.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm always curious. So the first time I saw Celebrini play live in person was just this in December. I went to Oakville to the World Junior Camp. And so I was really looking forward to see him. And, you know, I'd seen him under 18s and saw how impressive he was. And I'd seen some games that he's played on TV, but I'd never seen him in person. So when I went there and they were playing the U Sports teams, you understand the U Sports guys are all 20 to 25 years old. A lot of physically mature men that are good skaters and physically strong. And I watched the first 20 minutes, it wasn't even close. There was only one player on the World Junior, the Team Canada roster, that even looked like he could play with the university guys. He stood out. It was Celebrini. He had the puck. Mm-hmm. Every shift he was out there, he was making things happen. He was exciting. As soon as he came on the ice, you were like, oh, I got to watch what he's going to do. So, and I was curious, and I thought about the Sidney comparisons in terms of approach and style of play. I don't think he's as powerful or maybe quite as dynamic as Sid, but he might not be that far off. You never know.
Yeah.
But the other one that I'd heard some people say he reminded them of Jonathan Toews.
Yes.
And so I thought back to the first time I saw Jonathan Toews live, which would have been in the Vancouver, would have been 06, I guess, World Juniors, the camp in Vancouver. And I think that was his draft year. And I hadn't seen Toews play live. And I watched him and I was immediately drawn to how hard he worked, how good he was without the puck. When he had the puck, how he's able to make plays and use his body to protect the puck. And so I was watching Celebrini and I thought, I can see where a lot of people would say there are a lot of similar qualities to Jonathan Toews, another player who's real good without the puck and who is really good with the puck. And Celebrini's actually more dynamic offensively at the same age than Jonathan Toews was. And that's saying something, because Toews was not without, you know, skill and that sort of thing. But those are two guys whose names came up to me when I saw Celebrini.
Mm-hmm. Now, if I can cut in, Grant, sorry. While we're speaking on Celebrini, I'd just like to hear your opinion now. Where would you prefer him to go? Since the lottery hasn't been done yet, we don't know which team's picking first. Basing off of growth opportunities, the environment, the fan base, all those factors combined, is there a team that you're like, okay, this would be like a perfect situation for him?
Well, if you're an agent of chaos, you'd say you hope the Chicago Blackhawks win the draft. Just to see what the reaction is going to be. Oh, my goodness. Could you imagine if they
had... Yeah, I don't want to. I don't want to imagine
if the Blackhawks end up with Macklin Celebrini and Connor Bedard. But, you know, I mean, you know, the place that wants, probably needs them, should have them, the San Jose Sharks. And there's an obvious natural connection there because, you know, Macklin's dad, Rick, is the director of the performance and... development and medicine and, and with the Golden State Warriors of the NBA. And of course, Golden State is in San Fran, and there's San Jose not too far. And so, you know, when, you know, Macklin Celebrini is probably the only prospect who at his USHL games had Draymond Green and other guys from the Warriors come out to see him play. And so that's a, you know, kind of a natural fit. San Jose is so bad, right?
Yeah.
So bad. Oh. They're just a bad hockey team. And so could they use this? Now, you know, the other thing, and I mentioned it in the story that I did, I'll be curious to see whether Celebrini is going to play in the National Hockey League next year or whether he decides to do what Owen Power did, do what Eric Johnson did, do what Jonathan Toews did, and that is go back to school for a year and be that much more, you know. And here's the thing: when you've got a dad like Rick Celebrini, who's worked for the Vancouver Canucks in sports medicine, and he's one of the pioneers in all sorts of medical things related to physiotherapy and soft tissue and chiropractic work and all of that, you know, for him to be around Steph Curry and everybody connected with the Warriors and see their sports science and their development in sports medicine and everything that goes with it, who better to call the shot on his than his dad in terms of what's best for his development? This is a case where it's not going to be, there's no National Hockey League general manager who's going to go tell Rick Celebrini, this is what we think is best, or we think we know better than you do what's best, because this guy's thought it all out. And part of the reason this kid's as good as he is, quite aside from all the God-given talent he's got, is the fact that he's had, you know, an elite level trainer his whole life.
Yeah.
Preparing him for every situation, both on and off the ice.
That's it.
Well, it'd be interesting, like Lane Hutson's brother, Cole, obviously is going to, you know, he's going to play in BU next year. Now, you know, maybe that'll be a bit of a factor too. If Macklin says, you know, I'm going to come back for another year. How about you come, you know, come back, mentor your younger brother, and we'll go for a national championship. Like, it might have a factor in it too.
You never know. But Macklin Celebrini is going to do whatever is best for his life.
Oh, for sure.
And absolutely. 100%. He's in his brother's there.
That's right.
Macklin's own brother, Aiden, is there.
That's right.
You know, what Cole Eisenman's supposed to go there next year, isn't he?
Yeah, that's right. So, I mean,
Eisenman and Celebrini were teammates at Shattuck. So.
Yeah. Well, if they come up just a little short this year, maybe, you know, I've seen it with other guys that wanted to come back and win, you know. I mean, they're in college, right? Best time of their life, best memories of my life were college time, you know, and who knows, maybe that'd be cool if they all played together next year too. Soleyev, I don't know if you've heard, you know, and I'm not one big on comparisons all the time either, but my first thought when I saw him was Victor Hedman.
Yeah. And that's, there's a lot of scouts mention Hedman in terms of if this guy hits, if he pops the way that the scouts think he's going to, that he could be a guy that would be in the Victor Hedman universe in terms of the things that he brings to the game. It's not to say he's exactly the same as Hedman, that he's going to be better than Hedman or worse than Hedman, just that he's got the same physical dimensions. He skates extremely well. He's got the ability to contribute offensively. He's got the ability to shut things down defensively. And as one scout said to me, you know, he's not as purely offensive as Chris Pronger was at the same age. He's not as purely as terrifyingly intimidating as Zdeno Chara was at the same age when he was in Prince George, beating people up and what have you. But he's got enough elements of both of their games that if all develops the way that you would want it to develop, that he could come into the National Hockey League and have a similar impact that Victor Hedman had on the Tampa Bay Lightning. And that's why he's as prized as he is.
Yeah. And I mean, I waited back and forth for me at 2 and 3. You know, you can change. I mean, I've had Soleil of 2 for most of the year, but yeah. Lindstrom, you know, the 6'3 Canadian center that's filling the net, that can skate great, that has a physical edge, that's you know you're probably going to get in a year or two and develop it, you know, through the Canadian system. There aren't many drafts where a kid that fits that description doesn't go top two, are there?
No, exactly. So, and again, sometimes it'll come down to team needs and things like that. Everybody says they take the best player available, but some in a year where you've got so many big defensemen, I mean, you know, the Leshchenkov kid from Michigan State, you know, he's projected by a lot of scouts to be a top pair guy. He's already 6'2 plus, 200 plus pounds, and you know, really strong skater, and he's putting up some really good numbers. He's the third youngest player in the NCAA, and he's already got 7 goals and better than a point a game.
Yeah.
And, you know, and I don't think anybody's projecting him to be, quote unquote, an offensive defenseman. But, I mean, he's going to be a really strong two-way guy that is going to contribute at a significant offensive level. But he's also going to be physical and shut down plays and kill plays and be a good defenseman as well. So to have two defensemen like Siliev and Shunov in the top five for a team, you know, because some teams are loaded with talent up front and some teams are loaded on the blue line. But so there might be, you know, we've got some real interesting decisions to make if you're a team, whether it's forward or defense.
Yeah. The guy that's risen the most in the top 10 over the last month for me is Parekh. I think a lot of scouts didn't have him in the top, maybe even the top 15, because there were concerns with his defense, you know. I've seen a progression with that, and I mean, he's on pace for 100 points as a you know, as a rookie defenseman. Not a rookie defenseman, but a draft eligible defenseman. And I was looking back at stats, and you have to go back. The last guy to do it was the coach of the Bruce Cassidy when he was with the 67. So, I mean,
there you go.
Go ahead.
I was just checking, and 7 of the 10 scouts I talked to ranked them number 11 or higher. Wow. So I realized as soon as I started doing it, it's always kind of intriguing as you start getting the results back from guys. And I immediately noticed that trend that Parekh was going to be a top 10 guy on our list. Because I know a lot of the other independent services, a lot of them had him lower and were flagging, you know, defensive plays, a one-trick pony, he's purely an offensive guy. But as they say about Yzerman, if you're a one-trick pony, scoring goals is a pretty good trick to have.
Yeah.
And I think too, there's a feeling that, you know, he's not 5'9", he's not 5'10", he's 6 feet tall.
Yeah.
He's not, you know, he's not a monster, but he's a strong kid, and he's a great skater and a great shooter and a great with the puck. And, you know, so, you know, and again, I'm not, and I'm definitely not comparing this kid to Erik Karlsson, but part of the reason Carlson fell in his draft was because of size, because of defensive, you know, no tendencies for defense, all offense all the time. More and more scouts I talk to are getting a sense that Zane Parekh is going to have a huge offensive impact in the National Hockey League. And there don't seem to be any physical flags in terms of why he couldn't learn to play defense, and that he doesn't, you know, he's not one of those kids that has an attitude of, I have no interest in playing defense. It's just, I'm better at offense in junior hockey than I am defensively. And his defense probably, as you point out, isn't as bad as people think it is anyways.
Yeah. I saw him live last weekend and he was fine defensively. Yeah. He competes. Like, he's not, I know early on, and you probably heard it too, was, he could be the next Ryan Merkley, but he seems to have a lot more interest in learning how to play defense. Right. Everyone that I talk to, boasts about his character, that he's a real character kid and a character family and stuff. So I think he's just going to keep with his feet and in competitiveness, that he's only just going to improve defensively as he goes along.
Yeah, and you're right. There was Ryan Merkley, and you're right. At the time, even in his draft year, he was flagged for attitude or character or whatever you want to call it. Nobody was disputing his offensive ability, but there were people that worried about, overall attitude. And I remember Ryan Murphy, who played for the Kitchener Rangers. He was an all offensive guy, and there's some comparisons between Murphy and Parekh, but there was also a sense that Murphy really didn't have great interest in wanting to learn how to play the defensive side, and I don't think anybody gets that vibe from Parekh. And I think Parekh might, and I could be wrong on this, but I think Parekh might be a little bigger than Murphy was at the time.
Oddly. The only guy in our top 16 where there's a little bit of a difference, I would say, I've got Iginla 8th, and I believe your list has him 16, is it?
Yeah.
So... And then Catton, I've got like 16, and you have 10. Now, were there any, were there some guys that had Iginla as a top 10 guy? Because I know some scouts...
That's what I'm looking for right now. Let's have a peek here. Keep this very confidential, you know. Where is it going? I had a couple of guys that had them 10 or higher. The vast majority of them were, then after that was like 11 to 20.
Okay.
So there were 8 other guys that had them 11 to 20. But this is the thing about consensus rankings is, at the end of the day, it takes one team to like a guy or not like a guy.
Yeah.
And it throws the whole thing right out the window.
Yeah.
And, so I'm never surprised when somebody who's ranked in 15 or 16 or 17 or 18 goes in the top 10. And I'm never surprised when somebody who's ranked in the top 10 falls out and then goes down to 20, because in reverse, it's, it only takes one team to like a guy for him to be selected up here. It only takes one team to not like a guy for him to drop to the next level. It only takes that team to like one guy better than that guy. And the next team, only one team, one guy better than that guy. And boom, boom, boom. And suddenly a guy is falling down the charts. And people are saying, why is he falling down the charts? There must be a reason. Well, it could be. Sometimes maybe there is something got flagged on a character issue or a physical issue or something. But quite often, it's just the coincidence of 5 teams in a row liking one guy better than that one guy who got passed over once up here. And suddenly now he's on the roller coaster ride down and everybody thinks that's interconnected when it's really, I just like this guy a little bit better than that guy.
Yeah.
We saw that exactly with Gabe Perreault and with Dmitry Simashev, right? Bob, you had him 19th. He went 6th, and then
Perreault, size.
He went 23rd. So that's, you explained that perfectly. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Well, Arizona.
And I don't, and you're right on the Perreault thing. I don't think anybody is looking at it and saying, oh, Perreault's a terrible skater, or he's got a character issue. That, I don't think it was any of those things. I think it was, in that instance, it was like, we just like one guy better than Gabe Perreault, and it kept on happening. And
yeah.
It ends up being a coincidental thing. And I think anybody who looks at it now would say, that's a nice pick for the Rangers.
Well, he was a little smaller, right? And there's always the size factor. And I think that's why he, but there were teams, that, certainly scouts, that had him top eight, you know?
Yep.
And like everyone I knew liked him top 10, but it only takes one other guy. And I always say that. So let's go on to the next 10. Now, our lists are very similar. Like there's not a lot of difference there. When you look at this group, Connolly had such a great World Junior Challenge that I could see him, if teams end up being okay with the character end of things, I think you could see him going top 10. Could you not?
Yeah, a number of scouts made the remark that, you know, if you just look at it on overall play, Trevor Connolly's outplaying Cole Iserman this season.
Yes.
That's to be looked at. I mean, Yakimchuk's an interesting guy, a lot of goals for a big defenseman. I ranked him at 12, you ranked him at 14. And I do know that, you know, some of the scouts I talked to like him. Well, some actually had him inside the top five. So that's one where it's like the goals and the size can be a seductive thing. So that's a guy that, you know, might go, could, if he went a lot higher than either you or I have him. And again, this is midseason rankings. I always allow for the
poll. Oh, for sure.
Things are going to change drastically between now and the end of the season. So,
yeah. And obviously you then had some guys that had him outside of the top 15. What I've heard on it, there are some teams that there's still some concerns with the skating. I guess that's probably what you heard too, right?
Yeah. Yep. So, it's, you know, again, big defenseman scoring all those goals.
Oh. You got him 6'1¾", I think it listed. So, good size. Yeah. He's just always involved in the game, right? And I think that he's one of those wild cards at this point. I could see him. That doesn't surprise me that some teams have him that high, but it also doesn't surprise me that there are some concerns with some with his skating, and that can always hurt a guy. Going into the year, Kiva Harju was, a lot of people consider him as a potential top five guy. Now, why do you think he's dropped off so much? Is it mainly because of his injury?
Well, it's certainly the injury is a factor. And again, I think the pendulum for the draft, for me, it always swings back and forth. And there was a period of time where, the smaller mobile puck handling defensemen, their stock was soaring through the roof. And then we've had a run of Stanley Cup champions. And when you look at their blue line, there's a lot of tall trees back there. A lot of length, a lot of weight, a lot of height. A lot of 6'2", 6'3", 6'4", Vegas and the like. And I think the pendulum's starting to swing back a little bit. And that's not to say that they won't make an exception at times for smaller defensemen. But go back and look at, and you would be better at this than I would. I'd need to get my old NHL guide and record book, or get on the Google machine and go back and look at how many 5'9", 5'10", 5'11", mobile puck handling defensemen that were drafted in the first round never made it.
Yes. Yeah.
And there's a lot of them.
Yes.
And the ones that do, you know, so Samuel Girard's great and what have you. And last year there weren't a lot of defensemen available last year. But a lot of the ones that were tended to be on the smaller side, Simashev accepted. You know, and so, you know, Detroit didn't hesitate to jump in on Axel Sandin Pelika, especially where they got him. He ended up going a little bit later than maybe some people thought he was going to go, in part maybe because of size. This year, the defensemen that are available, 6'7" for Siliev, 6'2" plus for Levshunov. The other one,
Dickinson's a big kid too.
Dickinson's a big kid.
My
list here. Yakimchuk is 6'2". Excuse me, Juracek's not a small guy.
No.
And then you get into Kivi Harju, and he's obviously, people were very excited him at the beginning of the year, and the injury certainly doesn't help. And he might be a guy that would override that size concern because he's so dynamic. But now he's got no more games to be played this year, and that's not going to help him.
Yeah, no, for sure. I mean, I have at least a dozen guys in the top 30 defensemen. I think this is one of the strongest defense crops that I can remember. It's deep. Are you getting that feeling?
There's a lot of defensemen and the scouts like, and I was looking at it compared to last year. We had two in the top, whatever it was, top 10 or 8 or whatever, mm-hmm. and then only four in the top 20. And this year on our rankings, TSN rankings, 7 of the top 14 players are defensemen. And all 7 of them are 6 feet or more.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. No, and lots of right defensemen too. So it's looking like a really strong defense. And I think Canada too, like in the last 5 years or so, in the first round, there hasn't necessarily been that deep a group of Canadians, but it's looking like a pretty strong, especially in the WHL. It's a strong.
Yeah, big time. It was a big year in the dub last year, and it's another big year this year. So
yeah,
and I think of our top 32 ranked guys on the TSN list, 18 are Canadian. That's a high number, and I mean, there's only one Swede, and you got Pettersson. Pettersson, just made the cut on our list, and he's kind of a wild card because there is support for him a lot higher than where we had him. There's also a lot of support for him way into the second round and late second and that. So he's a bit of a wild card, and there's a bunch of wild cards there. And so let me ask you, so Ottawa Valley guy, Letourneau, what's he all about?
Yeah. Well, we're going to put up the next 20 here, and I've got him Brayside, right from Brayside. I've got him 21.
Yeah. There you go.
And cut off.
We had him at 30. He's at 30. He's at 32 on ours.
So he just made the cut. Well, that's good. Yeah. I mean, he's 6'7".
I can tell you, I got 3 scouts that have him inside the top 20, and I got three scouts that have them that barely had them in their top 80. And then I got a bunch of guys in the second round, some of them just outside the second round. So, I mean, he's big, he's skilled. Some scouts have to get over the feeling of somebody who's 6'6".
Tough.
He's got to be physical. He's got to be tough. You got to get over that and realize, okay, well, can he use his size to advantage? So, the question scouts will ask themselves is this guy a legit guy that can transpose his size, strength, athleticism, and skill and productivity at the next level, or is he Joe Colbert? A guy who was 6'5" or whatever when he played Junior A in the Alberta Junior League and played in the NHL, but didn't really make a significant mark for a prolonged period of time.
Yeah, I wasn't a big Joel Colbert guy. I thought he was overrated, but that one I got right. Sometimes the blind squirrel gets the nut right. And also the fact that he's playing at St. Andrews College. So that factors in with some scouts too, I think, right?
Yeah, and the fact that he's, you know, whether he's in Sioux Falls next year, or I don't know when he plans on going to BC, Boston College, how soon that is. Does he play a year in the USHL and then go, or what's the, what the plan is? I'm not sure, so.
Yeah. What do you think of the, just what I'm thinking of it, the AHL, AJHL?
Yeah, you know what? I haven't, I don't know enough about it.
Okay.
It's very, it, when I say it's disconcerting, I don't mean that in a bad way. I mean, you know, it's disconcerting that there's as much upheaval in the junior hockey system in Canada with kids getting caught in the middle and games being canceled, and how's it all going to work, and the whole Outlaw League versus Hockey Canada and all of the politics that get involved. So I don't know enough about it, and I'm outside of that realm now that I don't have to take the time or effort to educate myself on it. And that's why I literally call myself the hockey outsider. So I don't have an opinion other than it's unfortunate that things are as fractured as they are, and that it's not more of a cohesive, with the development model, you want stability, not chaos. And this initial thing, maybe this leads to more stability in some fashion, but in the short term, it's much more chaotic, and that makes it harder for everybody.
Absolutely. I noticed Greeden's a bit of a, you know, he's, you probably have some guys that have him towards the end of the second round, or I would think.
Yeah, there's some question, you know, will he play with enough pace? And then there's other guys that, that have them a lot higher than we have.
Yeah. I figured that you must
probably
have.
He's a big range. And quite frankly, you know, Reading at 29, Pedersen at 31, Letourneau at 32, Polkinen at 33, Artemanov at 34, Shervin at 39, Hudson at 40, Hughes at, a couple of those numbers might have been off. That was an older list I was looking at. But there's a whole bunch of guys that are really all over the map. Kind of being wild cards. And, excuse me. You know, a guy like Polkinen, I'm not sure what to make of him.
Well, I got him in the first.
You're older than most of the prospects. And, offensive ability and size, and it'll be fascinating to see where it goes.
Yeah.
Excuse me. I had come off a little bit of illness, and I just ran out of water. So.
No problem. The Polkinen, I was trying to think of the last undrafted guy that was eligible in the year before. I think Tanner Pearson was the last first round, overage guy. It was picked in the first round.
Yeah, Kudbel, yeah, makes sense.
Yeah, and Luchenko, I'm gonna presume that he's another guy that some teams maybe had mid-second or so. He's not the biggest kid, but boy, he's got really nice mitts, eh?
Yeah, he does. And there's a lot of support for him in the 20s. There's a lot of support for him in the 30s. A lot of support for him in the 40s.
Yeah.
So, you know, is he a guy that could slip out of the first round? Yeah. Is he a guy who could go a little higher than that? Yeah.
And Parisak, I think that's a nod, you know, as much as anything. Like, I don't see physical skills that he's not the biggest guy. He's maybe not the greatest skater.
Right.
But you got to give him a nod for the points that he's put up this year, and just – really smart kid, eh? I guess, again, they're, you know, in talking to some scouts that I know, they don't see him as a first rounder, but right. Based on merit, on what he's accomplished this year, he's got to be, you know, in the 25 to 35 range with most, I guess.
Yeah, and, you know, and I can find two or three scouts that have him a lot higher than that. And then more that have him right around there or in the 30s. And then, as you point out, down to the 40s, 50s, and 60s.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's always fascinating. So when you get those rankings and you know darn well that there's going to be, you know, that there's going to be surprises from what, you know, you look at your list and people will say, oh, well, that guy dropped so much, but you know, just from the surveying scouts that it could be, you know, the guy could go anywhere from where you have him to a round or two or more, right?
Yeah. And as I say, these are just mid-season rankings, and they could be in quite a state of flux between now and the end of the year, I think.
Yeah.
No doubt. Mm-hmm.
EJ Emery's another guy that I think you're going to see teams maybe warm up to a bit. And another one of those big defensemen that can skate. And I've seen the comparisons to Condé Miller more than once.
Right. Yep, makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Let's go. Let's bring up the last last grouping here. Okay, there's the Brayside boy there, 32.
Yep.
And Massé still in your top 35, eh? I know scouts have just cooled on him a little bit because of skating concerns, and I guess that again, you probably have guys that like him in the first, at the end of the first, and then there's probably guys that like him in the 50 range.
Yeah, I would say there's a lot of strong support for him, 20s, 30s, and 40s. So
good, good. Yeah, well, that's and Henry Muse is someone that, I mean, I get to see Ottawa quite often, and I think he's been he's sort of been trending down a bit over the last couple months.
Yeah, there's again, I'm not sure what's the size on Muse.
Well, that's funny. They've got him listed at 6 foot, but
6 foot 183.
I certainly don't. If he's 6 foot, it's you know, it's maybe with his running shoes on. Put it that way.
There you go.
But I mean, that's again, our top 40 is pretty close, and it's like you say, there's not a lot of Swedes. I've got the one Swedish defenseman, Wallenius, in the first, and you've got him at 38 there. So that's, you know,
and I should point out that literally, well, I would say maybe not every player, but this is usually true of the rankings year after year after year, is usually anybody who's ranked in the top 50 to 55 on the TSN list usually ends up with at least one, if not two, first round votes. That's not unusual.
So, yeah.
And that's why it's always nice to get as many guys drafted. And if you've got 32 ranked in the first round, you're always hoping that 32 go in the first round, but they don't. And that somebody who's ranked 50 some odd usually ends up in the first round. And that doesn't surprise me in the least, because when you talk to the scouts, as I say, only takes one team to like a guy and boom, done.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. Well, I mean, solid, and the midterm rankings, as you know, things will change, and sometimes quite a bit. The one guy, like you have Berkeley Catton at 10, for instance, now, I'm reminded a bit of Braden Yeager last year, who right up until probably February was in the top 10. He had such a great Linka, and you never forgot that, right? But then the more you watched him and the more you looked at a 5'11 centerman, you want to go to the dirty areas to compete, because it's going to be so hard to be a top two center at that size in the NHL unless you are really competitive. And I think Yeager, by the end of, you know, he ended up going, I think, after 15 last year.
Right.
And I could see a similar thing happening with Catton. Even though we've seen how skilled he is, and he puts up good point totals. What has your feedback been on Catton this year?
Well, I guess we're really, quite aside from Catton, just in general terms,
yeah,
that whole sliding value of, say, a center. So if you're picking in the top 10, there seems to be a sense internally with a team, you want to hit a home run. You want somebody mm-hmm. who's going to be a top line guy. If he's not a top line guy, somebody who's going to really be a top two line guy. And to your point, if you think that, you know, using the Jaeger example from last year, that he's more likely to be a three than a two, well, then, you know, you're be more comfortable taking a potential 3C at 15 or later, as opposed to 10 or higher. And that's what happens with a lot of these guys. And again, it's all subjective. I mean, it all comes out in the wash 3 to 5 years from now.
Yeah.
And what have you, but that internally teams have this perception of what is the ceiling for this guy. And it's there's the old safe pick. I think if you're picking in the top 15, you generally don't want a safe pick. You'd like to get a player that you believe is going to impact you in a big way. And that equates to, is the guy a top two line player or a top four defenseman? And those are the guys, that's how decisions get made internally with the teams. And they're saying, we think this guy's going to be a top two line player, but we therefore don't hesitate to use a top 10 or a top 12 or a top 15 pick on him. The thing with Katten, I mean, he was best player for Canada at the World Junior, Hlinka last summer.
Oh, yeah.
He had all those goals. He played extremely well. He's not the fastest skater in the world. He's not the biggest guy in the world. He's a really smart player and plays a real good two-way game and has offensive capabilities. So some teams will look at him and say, as you did, maybe he's going to be a three. If he's going to be a three and we're picking in the top 12 or 13, maybe let's try and go for somebody that's going to be a two or take a top four defenseman. Whereas some other teams might look at Katten and say, we're picking in the top 10 and we're confident this guy's going to be a second line center in the National Hockey League. And he's going to be responsible without the puck. And he's going to be, he can make plays and he can score goals and he's going to contribute enough offensively to be a 2C. Let's take it.
And a lot will depend on playoffs. It always does for me. And I think it does for NHL teams. If he produces like he is now at playoff time when things get tighter, he'll go back up my list. He might be top 10, and I think that's an important factor for NHL teams as well.
Yeah, for sure. Awesome.
Well, okay, Bob, 90 minutes. I think that's enough of your time. And Yellow's going to be, he's going to be pulling his one hair out there, seeing how long this podcast went. But, such a pleasure to have you on, Bob, and thanks for taking so much time.
Really appreciate it.
I appreciate it. Thanks for having me, guys. It was my pleasure. I don't really do podcasts anymore, but I wanted to promote wanted to make sure I did my due diligence to promote the TSN midseason draft rankings and also to have a chance to talk to you, Brent.
Okay, awesome. Bob. Thanks
and
a lot.
And try not to fight with so many people on social media. It's not very becoming.
No, I, I'm not as cantankerous as I used to be. I think you, I hit the big 6-0 there this past weekend, so I'm mellowing with age.
Life's too short to, take care of Teddy and away you go.
Thanks, Bob.
All right, Bob. Take care. Thank you so much.
Thanks a lot.
All right, bye-bye. That was Bob McKenzie, the legend, the draft guru who doesn't scout, but you know what? He is the reference. Every year he gets it right. So you know what? When he puts out his last ranking, you can put some money on it. It's probably going to be pretty accurate. And man, that was so much fun. An hour and a half, maybe it's our longest show yet, but it could have been so much longer. I mean, there's just so much to delve into. So we really appreciate Bob's time. Grant, any parting remarks?
No, that was just marvelous. And Bob's Bob's my mentor when it comes to anything. I got into this business and draft guide and all that, I'd have to say largely because of Bob. So It's just, I got to know him when he, like he mentioned there, I got in touch with him when he was doing TSN's draft profiles and struck up a friendship, and he got me to write profiles for TSN for a couple of years till they hired Craig Button to do all that stuff. And he's just a super, super nice guy that I completely respect. So yeah. Thanks again to Bob for coming on with us.
Yeah, I know everybody's tuning in is going to be loving this, you know, and hey, who knows? Hopefully we can get him on again. That would be great, closer to the draft, get those final rankings and all that. But in the meantime, you know what? We're keeping rolling on, right? We've been on a roll lately. We're going to get some more great guests for you. And as always, we're going to have our prospect show with our friend Rocco every week. It's not changing anytime soon. So we thank you all for tuning in. Much appreciated. And we'll see you all in the next one. Take care.
And that's a wrap. Hope you don't miss us too much until next time. Follow the Sick Podcast Recruits Draftcast on YouTube, Facebook, Google Play, and Apple Podcasts.